Hello and welcome to Your Employment Matters. I'm Beverly Williams and I'm here to help you navigate your career. This is for anyone who's searching for their dream job or promotion, or perhaps you're just looking to hang on to the job you have. Today's work environments are multi-generational, multi-religious, multinational, multiracial, and multi-gender and multi-gender identity. Add market disruptors like Amazon and Lyft, along with the addition of AI, and it's easy to see why finding and keeping a job is such a challenge. Employment success and even employment survival depend on your ability to adapt. That's why my goal for this 30-minute podcast is to first advocate embracing change and differences, and second, to encourage you to proactively assume responsibility for your career. Get your work week off to a good start by listening to Your Employment Matters every Monday. Find out how to own your career and get the best practices for making your employment matter. My guest today is Marcia Werner Esquire. Yes. She's an attorney, and throughout her career, Marcy has concentrated her general practice on family law, employment law, guardianship, and whatever interested her. And I understand that because I do the same as a practicing attorney. Marcy is the kind of person who will help you if you ask her. And so we're clear. Every attorney does not do that. But she's never hesitated to answer my questions or not make me feel inept or uninformed when I didn't understand something that she was talking about. Having said that, I'm not a person who lacks confidence, so it's not easy for people to make me feel like, oh, I don't know that. I want to learn. And that's what I tell my listeners. Not knowing is not a problem. It's not finding out the answer to questions that you may have. And Marcy is the type of person who's always answered my questions. And one of her passions is a process, an alternative dispute resolution tool called collaborative law process. She's passionate about it. She was so passionate about it when she talked to me. I can't tell you I've become passionate about collaborative law, but I am really interested in whether or not this alternative dispute resolution tool has application in the labor management relations arena. And when I raised that to Marcy, she was excited about it because she's a kindred spirit and we like to find ways to resolve disputes without acrimony, if possible. There's enough of that in our discussion and society these days. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And I'm truly grateful to Marcy for her patience because this is her second attempt to share this information with you. So sit back and listen and take notes because that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to listen and learn about the collaborative law process and about my friend, Marcy Werner. Marcy, please, if you could just give us a little background about who you are and what you do, what you like to do. I've shared some of what I know, but I'd like for people to hear from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
First, Beverly, thank you so much for that beautiful introduction. That was just very lovely to hear. I have been a practicing attorney for 45 years. I am recently retired. Most of my practice during those 45 years was in the family law arena. I also did a fair amount of employment law And as you said before, whatever interested me. So for example, years ago, there was a case where the Ridgewood Kiwanis Club wanted to admit a woman. Women were not allowed in a Kiwanis Club at that time. It was all men. I was contacted and asked if I would consider pro bono representing the Ridgewood Kiwanis Club, and I did. And we were in the federal court system. We tried the case and won the case at the trial level. It was taken up on appeal by the Uber Kiwanis Club, and we lost on appeal. We filed paperwork with the Supreme Court of the United States seeking certiorari. At the same time, a case was going up, a similar case, with the Rotary Club. The Rotary Club got there first. The Supreme Court said, no, it's a public accommodation. You have to admit women. And so our case became moot. And after that, women were admitted to the Kiwanis Club. And that was such a great experience for me to do. So throughout my career, whenever something interesting came my way, I jumped in. I've written a number of amicus briefs. For
some people, what amicus briefs are.
Oh, it's a friend.
And pro bono, in case they don't know.
Oh, okay. Pro bono is you don't get paid. And amicus is a friend of the court. So you have to apply to the court and explain to the court why you or your organization should be heard by the court as part of a case that you are not involved in as a named party. And if the court says, yes, we want to hear from you, then you write a brief for the court. So I've done that for the Bergen County Bar Association in an ethics matter. I've done that for the New Jersey Collaborative Divorce Group, the statewide collaborative divorce group. That was the most recent time I did it. So that's a little bit about me.
Tell us about collaborative law.
Collaborative law started in the 1980s. A family law attorney named Stu Webb in Minnesota had it up to here. You can't see me, but up to here, above my head, with what goes on in matrimonial law and divorce and custody cases. The fighting, the hatred, the making things much worse for the parties, for the children. The cost and expense, the loss of privacy, because once you have a matter in court, it is no longer private. The loss of control over timing. So he decided there had to be a better way. And he and some like-minded people came up with the collaborative process. I'll go into that a little more in a minute. But it started in Minnesota. It then spread to California. In terms of being in the forefront of family law in the United States, California and New Jersey are two of the top states. It went to California, then it spread throughout the United States and, in fact, throughout the world. Right now, there is an umbrella organization called the IACP, International Academy of Collaborative Professionals, that has over 3,000 members. Over 5,000 members. I misspoke. There are 325 practice groups in 24 countries around the world.
Well, and I didn't know that.
Yeah. And every year there is a conference which takes place anywhere around the world. And people go. And I've been to a number of them. And it is just amazing, the wealth. The wealth of intelligence, the wealth of hardworking people, the wealth of camaraderie, and the wealth, as you said before, of passion about this different way of doing things. So let me explain what it is. The collaborative process is out of court, all caps, boldface, underlined. When people enter into a participation agreement, which is what starts the process, they agree to a number of things. They agree to transparency, and they agree that if the collaborative process fails, in my experience, that is unusual, but it does happen. They have to get new attorneys. The collaborative attorneys cannot go to court. It's part of the deal. It's part of, we are dedicated to getting this resolved out of court. And if we can't do it, well, you're going to get other lawyers to do it. And so there's also an agreement that everything that happens in the collaborative process is private and is actually privileged. In 2014, New Jersey enacted the Uniform Collaborative Law Act and gave the imprimatur of New Jersey law to the act, which, among other things, says everything that happens is privileged. You can't go to court and subpoena the attorneys who represented you or any of the other professionals who were involved in the collaborative process and ask them to testify. And that actually was tested in New Jersey a couple of years ago. That was the amicus brief that I wrote in a case where they were trying to do that. And the privilege was upheld.
Great.
So very, very
important. What does transparency include? When you say there's transparency, does that mean you have to give up your privacy with respect to?
No, it means that in terms of family law, and this would apply in any arena, collaborative has been used, I think, largely in family, but also quite a bit in estate matters. And there are attorneys who are doing it in the employment arena. Anytime, and I'll go back to the transparency, anytime emotions are running high, which in those situations is almost always the case, collaborative is, in my view, the best way to go. The transparency relates to, in family law, you're not going to hide assets. You're not going to misrepresent. You are going to, whatever information is requested by the professionals who are involved, you are going to give honest and full disclosure. So another word for the transparency is full disclosure. No holding back, no playing games. We are in this. Nobody ever gets everything they want, but we're in this to try and get them what they need.
See, that's why I think it would work in a labor negotiations context, because whether or not there's going to be a resurgence of unionism in America, there at least is more a heightened interest in unionism. Whether it comes to fruition and more people join unions, I don't know. But when I read the media accounts of the strikes that have taken place over the past few years, I don't see anybody winning. I don't see labor winning. I don't see management winning. Because if they strike, they lose income on both sides. And especially the workers, well, it's going to be very difficult for them to recoup the money they lost. Mm-hmm. Like the SAG strike. Those employees, those workers, are not going to recoup the money they lost after that lengthy strike. They may have negotiated higher rates of pay, but it's not going to make up for what they lost. It's a go forward, looking forward situation unless they negotiate being made whole, which is unusual. I rarely hear or have heard of that in my years of negotiations and being involved in the labor relations process. So in everyone's best interest, and it would create collaborative law, and that process would create a win-win for both sides. Everybody wins.
That is the goal. And the way the process works, once you've entered into your participation agreement, both sides have a collaboratively trained attorney. And that collaborative training, there is initial basic training, but collaborative attorneys train and train and retrain and retrain. It is an ongoing process. We learn to listen in a different way, and we learn to communicate in a different way. and we learn how to speak what our clients are saying to us back to them to make sure we understand it, to make sure they really understand what they're saying. Another hallmark of the collaborative process is that it is interdisciplinary. That means it's not just the lawyers and the clients. We use financial professionals as necessary, and they are neutrals. They are not the hired gun for one side or the hired gun for the other side. They are neutrals who are agreed upon by the attorneys and by the parties. And again, in the family law context, they look at valuation of assets. They look at lifestyle. They look at income and help us come up with a plan for alimony, child support, distribution of the assets. They are the experts on that, and they are invaluable for two reasons. One, because they are trained to do what they do. Lawyers are not trained financial professionals. We are trained attorneys. So we have a professional doing what the professional does best. Second thing is they are neutrals. So in terms of the client's relationship with them, there is no taking sides.
And you know, in the labor management context, many times over time, over the years, relationships deteriorate because of past offenses or the perception of past offenses. I know I've represented clients that have hated their counterparts across the table because of something that happened the years before. And that's why I think that bringing in objective professionals with no axe to grind, whose only interest is resolving the dispute so that everyone wins, it doesn't serve to any party's detriment, either financially or professionally, in terms of how they conduct their business. And for listeners, Marcy has generously edited and contributed to an article I've written about using the collaborative law process in labor negotiations. And I know, I'm reasonably sure, that people who are resistant, let's say, to change are not going to welcome the possibility of doing things differently, especially if it means that they won't be involved in the process because they have a relationship with either party, whether as a client or as a union representing people. And, you know, a lot of times both sides want to flex. They want to flex muscles figuratively. They want to position themselves as operating from a position of strength. And the objective is to reach an agreement that's mutually acceptable and mutually beneficial. That's always been what my objective has been.
Right. And here's what happens when, again, in the family arena, or my experience in employment has been in discrimination or wrongful discharge. I have not been involved with unions, but you get to court and you can flex all you want and you can argue all you want and you can stomp your feet and throw yourselves on the ground. But the judge ultimately, or a jury, if it's a jury case, which family law cases are not, is going to make a decision. And that judge is never, ever, ever going to know as much about your case at the end of a trial as you know today. You want someone else who doesn't know you to be making decisions about your life? People do, because just as you said, they want to flex muscle, they want to show off, they want to win, but nobody wins. And oftentimes, you walk out of court, and if one side has wiped out the other side, what do you get? You get appeals that go on for years and cost tens Absolutely. And hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you get more hatred in a family or in the employment context, which has so many of the same emotions going on as a family matter. You know, there's loss and there's mourning and there's anger and there's betrayal. I mean, I always thought that employment cases were very, very much like divorce cases because it's a divorce from your employment, which is such an important part of your life. Nobody wins.
Exactly. As I said in my article, Marcy, let's begin the discussion. No harm, no foul. I belong to an Inn of Court. It's a professional organization, which you know. Do you belong to the ADR?
I do not.
Okay. I'm going to talk to someone, the leadership there, and just submit my article to them for their consideration. And maybe it can be a topic for one of the monthly meetings. I want to hear why it wouldn't work, honestly. From the time I started negotiating contracts, from the time I started as an attorney representing management types in discrimination cases, I always thought that, like the person who, the man who started the collaboration law, the collaborative law process, there had to be a better way. There has to be a better way. This is crazy. You're taking people out of work so they can be on a negotiating team for a union or the management side, or you're taking up employees' time for depositions because an employee thinks they've been discriminated against. If you had objective people with no axe to grind, getting into the nitty-gritty of what happened and why it happened, and worked with the parties to, you know, sometimes you have to convince them that you don't have an axe to grind, although they've been told that you're a neutral. You know, I'm telling you, in the employment context, they ain't going to believe it.
The attorneys are not neutral. The attorneys in the collaborative process represent their clients, but they represent them in a different way.
But I'm telling you, with the clients, that because now that I don't do litigation anymore, I don't handle any litigation. I've represented management, and later in my career, I represented plaintiffs. And I'm telling you, they believe what they believe. And they will not be convinced otherwise. Somebody is out playing fast and loose with the truth. They know it. They feel it. And, well, I need more than feeling. And it's just counterproductive. I believe that there's another way to reach end of job that would be mutually advantageous and achieve satisfaction for both parties, all parties. And I haven't seen either employment or labor move in that direction. And they need to change.
I do think the collaborative process is something that I believe that it would work. I wanted to also mention, because I had mentioned that it was interdisciplinary in family matters, and I would think, and also in estate matters, because then you have the heirs fighting over this and that, and everyone hates everybody. And in employment matters, we use mental health professionals, not as therapists. They are not there as therapists. They are there as facilitators to move discussions along when they can bog down, to help individual parties when something gets out of hand, to deal with some emotions involved. So they're there to move things along. Again, they're trained to do that kind of thing. As attorneys, we all kind of think, or at least I always kind of thought, I had an honorary degree as a therapist because I seem to do so much of it. But in truth, I don't have a degree as a therapist. And so we work, again, with mental health professionals who are trained collaboratively. The financial professionals are trained collaboratively to be able to work with people, to bring down the temperature, to get out what's important. What do you need? What is most important to you? How can you move ahead? That's what it does. And it does it well.
And you know, it's really as simple as cutting through the BS, because sometimes that's just what it is. And it's who wants what, because they know that if they keep it, the other party will feel some kind of way. And that will make the person that keeps it feel better because they've adversely impacted the other party. That's what we need to get away from.
Yes.
And I don't care what anyone says, the employment law, labor law is replete with that kind of emotional angst.
Yes.
That works to the detriment of the process. The labor management process, the negotiation process is fine. It's the parties that throw it off kilter.
Right.
I mean, there's no reason not to have the right to strike, but it should be the path of least resistance. That should be the last thing that people resort to. But that's always in the front of their mind. Well, if we don't get this settled, we can strike. It should be a nuclear option. Not, oh yeah, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do. You know, it's counterproductive, in my opinion.
Agreed. But as you said, and I never forgot this, you spoke one year at one of the Bergen County Bar Association, you know, big annual dinners, and you were speaking, and I remember you saying, the heart wants what the heart wants. That just spoke to me. I said, yeah, that's what it's all about.
Did I ever tell you? Okay, I started to say I'm going to stop volunteering, but I'm not. But it was someone, they were giving a diversity award, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked a group of us from the—
That's the one I was talking about. That was the dinner. Yes.
Right. And they said, I said, oh, okay. So I get dressed, I go up there, and—
You were great.
They told me who the recipient was, but it didn't click in my mind. And I got there and I looked, and it was Judge Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at him. He's my godson's uncle.
Oh, I think I remember that. Yes.
And I reached out and I hugged him. And I said, oh, after given what I'm going to talk about, I shouldn't have done that. You know what I mean? So full disclosure, when I started talking, I said, you know, I tell my clients, keep your hands to yourself. But in the interest of full disclosure, I have to admit, when I saw Judge Miller, I hugged him. I shouldn't have done that without permission, but I'm telling you, keep your hands to yourself. But the heart wants what the heart wants. You're right. You get involved, and we usually think of it in a romantic context, but it's emotional.
Yes.
It is emotional. It's not only the heart, but the head. If your mind is telling you that you've been wronged, then you may fight to the end to try to vindicate your position. And I'm just saying, it's not all that. And it's not as crystal clear as people, litigants, might think. So
right. And they're very
together. Maybe we can make this happen.
I'm there.
I have so enjoyed this, as I always enjoy your company.
Thank you, and I do yours.
Just sharing your wealth of information with me personally. And divorce is a very emotional situation. And I know that labor negotiations and trying to negotiate settlements in employment cases, especially discrimination cases, they're emotional too. I just hope that because collaborative law is used for family law purposes or started out that way, that there won't be the reluctance to transition it or consider using it and transitioning it to labor and employment matters?
Well, people have to be educated, and somebody's got to step up to the plate and try it.
Well, I'm going to suggest, with your permission, that you educate the people in the alternative dispute resolution in a court, because I think it's something that could work. And I appreciate your willingness to come back after we had to abort the first effort to record this interview.
Not a problem.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And enjoy the rest of what's left of the winter.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to Your Employment Matters with Beverly Williams. If you found this podcast helpful, please subscribe and leave a review. I truly appreciate your support, and that helps other listeners find the podcast. If you have a comment, question, or suggestion, you can reach me at bawilliams@youremploymentmatters.com. My book, Get the Job Done, is available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Please join me again next week. Until then, remember to embrace change and differences.
This podcast is part of the Sound Advice FM network. Sound Advice FM, women's voices amplified.